Welcome, my friends. I'm Dave Champion, and this is the handsome and debonair co-host, Bill Carnes, and together we are totally unprepared. You know, from time to time, you and I have done a shout-out for businesses that we think deserve it.
In fact, we do.
And I don't mind doing a business that deserves it again. And I've got to say, Fit for 10 here in Pahrump, they continue to impress me. You know, and I've been in the gym. I got out of the military October 1984, and I joined the gym in November.
I think I was a high school freshman, and you got out.
That's right. And I have been going to the gym five, six times a week since then. So I have some gyms under my belt, and I understand what makes for a good operation and not so good operation. And I've got to tell
you, I'm not going to take that statement. GYMS under your belt,
but easy, Tiger. But Fit for 10 here in Pahrump, Lisa, the manager, and they've got Lindsay and Josie who work there, and the personal trainers, RJ and Joe. Great, intelligent, warm people. They understand the gym trade. They understand people, They do these motivational things like they've got a Biggest Loser. You remember that from television.
Cool, yeah.
They've adopted that, right? And, $300 purse for that if you take it. Great specials. But all of that is the marketing stuff. I mean, not the people. The people are awesome. But the Biggest Loser and the monthly thing, that's all marketing. But but what really matters to me when I recommend it to people is they run a great operation. They have great equipment. Lisa, the manager, is right on it. The owner is proactive. And that's something that can't be said, in my opinion, for any of the other gyms in this town. So if you're looking to have a good time, maybe get fit along the way, please do stop in and see Fit for 10. Awesome, awesome group, awesome people. Thanks.
I'd like to actually shout out to a lady that I know. She and her business partner have a company called Rockin' Rosies. I wore the shirt a couple weeks back. And they specialize in snakes, all kinds of different snakes. If you're into snakes and you want to have pet snakes, you want to learn about snakes, check them out at Rockin' Rosies.
And are they local?
They are local, yeah. They are local.
Rockin' Rosies.
Rockin' Rosies.
That name has nothing to do with snakes.
No, it doesn't. But where it comes from is Lee Aldridge, who's one of the principals in that, is a former professional guitar player, toured all around the world.
Okay.
As a matter of fact, she told me a story. She's got one of the primary guitar heads that you use for playing and recording and such. She got a bunch of her gear stolen, which is not unusual for folks in that industry. And the head that she has now, or one of them, was given to her by a guitarist by the name of Zakk Wylde. Now, he played on a few of the albums for Ozzy Osbourne starting in the early 90s, and he still guests with him sometimes. And the head that he gave to Leah is the one that he used to record one of Ozzy's biggest albums ever called No More Tears.
Okay.
And she now owns the head that Zakk Wylde used to record that with and toured with.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, she's awesome.
And so that's what the name of the – is it a website?
They do have a website as well, yeah, Rockin' Rosies. I think it's rockinrosies.com. and, of course, you and I both deal with a local fella who's got his place out here called AmmoSupplyWarehouse.com, Brian Becker.
Oh, yes, and, yes, absolutely.
Yeah, Becker has this, he has a bunch of, even friends of mine are working there. But they supply ammunition to folks all across the country. Yes. They do drop shipping and great
and
guys.
One of the things that's important for me, when I have the opportunity, like with Brian, to know the owner of the operation, one of the things that's really important to me before I'll recommend somebody is the character and integrity of the owner.
Well, you like him because he's also an AK-47.
That's true.
That doesn't hurt.
But no, really. I mean, Brian is a man of honor and character and integrity. And for me, when you recommend somebody to a business, if they don't get treated the way they need to get treated, who does that reflect back upon?
Oh, on you.
Right.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I've never once had a moment's hesitation. I've actually very joyfully recommended Ammo Supply Warehouse.
Yeah, I've never had a problem with it either. Brian's great. He and his business partner, Frank, who operates kind of the network side of it, mm-hmm. and Brian does more of the operational side of it. And anybody I know who ever comes to town that's going to be taking a firearms class mm-hmm. or need to go shoot or something, I always recommend, like, don't bother bringing your ammo.
Right.
Just
right.
Here's Becker's information. You know, go online, order it up, and you can arrange to pick it up from him if you're
local.
You
know, when people fly in, and I've told them this, when they fly in, they're pretty much, especially if they shoot like an off caliber or something, there can't be any errors. They're here. They've spent hundreds of dollars to get here.
Yeah.
Their course is going to be like the following morning. There can't be a foul up on their ammo. And I always tell them, if you do business with Becker, Ammo Supply Warehouse, he's that reliable.
Yeah.
You can bet when you get off the plane and drive to Pahrump and you go to get your ammo, you can bet your ammo is going to be sitting right there waiting for you.
Yeah, he's ready.
And that's important when you've already spent hundreds of dollars to get someplace.
It is. So AmmoSupplyWarehouse.com. Let's start talking about some of our things going on. You want to talk about Apple?
I do. No. The first thing I want to talk about is, because it ties into what I did last week,
okay,
is, you know, the whole transgender thing is
right. Oh, yes. Yeah, we're going to talk about the court case.
Right, okay.
Yeah, okay.
So, and I don't have to tell the audience what a big topic that is. I mean, on the news media, on social media, and...
Yeah, transgender bathrooms we're talking about, transgender bathrooms.
And to me, I indicated last week in my rant, it's the same if you go back to, you know, blacks needed to be segregated, people of different colors couldn't wed, all of the
Chinese railroad workers of the mid-1800s.
Yes, all of the discrimination up through and including, you
women.
Know, we can't have same-sex marriage, right?
Right.
With all these claims of horrible, terrible things that are going to happen, and how many of those things actually did? Zero.
I lost count.
Right. So, zero is an easy number to lose. So I've said this about this transgender thing. So now we have a case out of Virginia where a 16-year-old transgender high school student was going to use the bathroom of his that he identifies with. The proper way is to say which she identifies with, because that's the correct etiquette in these
male
matters.
Male genitalia, female
identity.
Identity, right.
So she has to use the bathroom with which she identifies. School district tells her no. It ends up going to court, which feeds into my rant about doing the same thing time and again, expecting a different outcome.
All the way to the Fourth Circuit, correct?
Right. So it goes to the district court. District court agrees with the school district. It goes to the Fourth, and the appellate court says, no, absolutely not. Now, there was two facets to this case. The first facet, which is the narrow part. If you're a school district and you accept federal funding, which virtually every single one does, under Title IX of the United States Code, you cannot discriminate, period. Okay? So the case only addresses public institutions that take public money. Okay? However, the macro, the gigantic theme of this case is that the Fourth U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals declared not allowing a transgender person to go into the bathroom with which they identify to be discrimination. Okay. And that's going to be the judicial concept that's going to carry forward, which goes to my rant, which is, why do you people keep doing the same thing? You don't want these laws. Let the transgender person go to the bathroom that they want to go into, because if you don't, guess how it's going to end? And this was the first shot of how it's going to end. The other reason I wanted to do this story is last week I also did that little bit about you don't care about facts, you don't care about evidence, you don't care about conclusions and truth. I'm going to tell you how it's going to go down, and then when it goes down, I'm going to rub your nose in it, right? I've been telling people this is exactly how it's going to go down. And here we have it.
Yeah, because history is our best predictor of the future.
Yeah.
And historically, these things have happened over and over and over again. Nobody wants, and you know, people that want to defend the more narrow-minded view of this will bring up the idea of the most ridiculous, just little straw of an idea of what they hang their hat on, when there's a massive pile of straw over here that is the other side of the argument that's going to win.
Right, right. So. And, you know, especially when it comes to this transgender issue, it's so funny because I saw a cartoon. I couldn't tell you what the characters are, but it shows these two characters sitting on a log facing away from you, right? And then you see the dialogue boxes overhead. And it was a bit dated because now it's about same-sex marriage, right? And there's a little dialogue about it, you know, and the one person is claiming that it's not legal because of this and they don't have a right to this. And the other character is very succinctly challenging each of those things. And it finally gets down to where the person who was objecting had all of their objections overcome. And finally, in the final frame, he says, well, being gay is icky. Right?
This sounds like a Calvin and Hobbes thing.
It could have been. I don't know.
Because they sit on the log
is
and face away.
Is one of them like
away.
A pink pig or something?
It's actually a tiger.
No, this is pink.
There's a pink pig?
Yeah.
Okay, I don't know. It wasn't Calvin.
But anyway, so, you know, and that's kind of how I see this whole transgender argument. People are constructing all of these, well, it shouldn't be because this. And somebody else will come on and say, well, you know, in addition, we shouldn't do it because of that.
It's talking about using rationale.
Right. Yeah. And at the end of the day, after you slap each one of them down on their BS, what it really comes down to is what we talked about a little bit at lunch. Number one, ew, I think that's icky. And they're what? Different than us.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. You're not the same as me. I don't identify with that.
Yes. So there's a problem.
Yeah.
I don't like this. It's new. It's different. So it has to be stopped.
Yeah.
And it's so funny. I never understand these people. I just unfriended somebody on Facebook who, I'm going to talk about this kind of person in my rant here momentarily. But I've never understood these kind of people. When I stood up for equal rights for homosexuals, there was a certain kind of person who said, oh, you must be gay. This is like, I believe in equal rights for everyone, including people who are Hispanic, female, Jewish, black, whatever. So what am I, a female, Hispanic, Jew, black? I mean, you know, and again, yesterday, and this goes to the way people are who oppose new and different things with which they are unfamiliar. And some guy just lost his cool because he could not win on the intellectual argument about this transgender bathroom thing. And because we're on the air, I won't repeat the swear words that he threw at me, concluding with, this is your own Facebook page, Dave. You should consider this your safe space, right, mocking the whole, your safe space to come out as gay.
Did you?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was me. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah, so, yeah. But it's like, you know, and the mentality, the small-mindedness of such people, I just went to his profile, unfriend. I won't even deal with people with that sort of mentality. And these are the kind of people I'm hearing speak out.
You know, what really scares me is these are the same sort of people, as we talked about earlier today, that hide behind the ideas of liberty as, because it's liberty, that means I can hate anybody I want, because that's liberty.
Right.
That is the exact opposite of liberty.
Right. In your heart, that's the opposite of liberty. But really, when you act on it, like in the economic marketplace, and you try and oppress others,
sure,
that's where, you know, if somebody wants to hate somebody, you're a sphincter.
Okay, right.
Whatever. But the minute they want to put that, they want to punish people in the public market.
Exactly. When you want to punish people, you want to make somebody suffer because they're different. They're not like you.
Yeah.
Right. All right. We'll be right back.
We're back, and now it's time for what is up with people trying to use the word or their warped, perverted version of liberty as some sort of a justification for bigotry, racism, and other forms of discrimination? I've noticed that there is a growing movement in social media where people who are racist or bigots in other ways are now creating these group pages that claim that they're all about liberty. But then when you look who's a part of these and you look at the dialogue that's taking place, wow, what they see as liberty is no land of liberty that I would care to live in, because it does not comport itself with the principles of liberty. One of the things that I've noticed is that the people who want to use their warped, perverted ideal of liberty, they parrot primarily three arguments to support their point. The first one is, and this goes to what they're trying to do, is justify discrimination in the marketplace. And what they say is, property rights are paramount. Now, anybody who understands the economic realities of a free society understands the basis of that is property rights. And I'm there 1,000%. However, there is no right, let me repeat that, there is no right that is absolute. None. Now, lots of people like to claim that, or they think that, or they'll say, well, if it's right, then it's absolute. No, Rights cannot be taken from you. It doesn't mean that you can do anything you want simply because you have rights. So, as an example, what is probably the most significant right we have? If we look at the Declaration of Independence, right? We have the right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Well, clearly, if you don't have the right to life, you can forget about the other two. So the right to life is paramount. However, if you come at me with what I perceive might be deadly force, you're going to forfeit your life. Sorry, it's not absolute. You did wrong, and you're going to pay the consequences. Your right to life is not absolute. It's absolute if you don't attempt to harm others. It is not absolute. Okay? And we could go through the Second Amendment. We can go with the right to search and seizure. We can go with the right to be secure in your private property. All of this. Okay? And not one is absolute. I think that's a very important principle for people to get under their belt. There is no right that is absolute, bar none. Okay? So when people say this right to property, that the business owner, here's where they're going with this, the business owner should make all the choices. No, doesn't work that way. We did do it that way, by the way, for 100 years from the end of the Civil War through the 1964 Civil Rights Act and then the 1968 Civil Rights Act and so forth, where a series of laws were carved out that protected, at that particular moment in time, black people, protected them from the incredibly oppressive way they'd been treated for 100 years in this country. I'm about to do a video, by the way, that'll appear on Dave Champion's Liberty page on Facebook, that's going to talk about the history of how blacks were oppressed during that 100-year period. And leaving aside all of the violence and all of the false jailings and all of the lynchings and all of that, when we talk about the economic marketplace, I don't think there's anybody, except perhaps a flaming moron, who does not understand and acknowledge that blacks were kept in a condition of economic bondage as a permanent economic underclass for 100 years. And the way they were kept that way was by business owners and business peoples doing whatever they wanted to do, no matter how heinous it was. And in the 1960s, we as a nation said no more. That discrimination is harm. And that's the only refuge these people have, is to claim somehow that discrimination is not harm, which of course is a nonsense concept. All you have to do is look back at how the blacks were treated during that period, the Chinese were treated during that period, Japanese were treated a little bit later, the Irish were treated. Clearly, discrimination is harm. If it keeps millions of people in as an economic underclass, it's harmful. And in fact, it may be more harmful than more apparent harm, such as, say, rape or battery. Because right then it's so apparent, it's so in your face, that everyone has to acknowledge the harm that's done. But discrimination in the economic marketplace is more akin to the death by 1,000 cuts. One little tiny cut, you barely notice. 1,000, you bleed out and die. And that's exactly what discrimination in the economic marketplace does. It's the death by 1,000 cuts. And it is clearly harm, perhaps even a worse harm, because it is more insidious and less apparent than more readily visible crimes such as things like rape and battery. The second argument that they rely on is that government should stay out of it. Well, that's just convenient, because if government stays out of it, then they can do whatever they want. What a self-serving argument, right? From a bunch of self-serving pricks, so it's what it is. And here's the thing. By saying government should stay out of it, what they're saying is the preeminent role of government should no longer exist. Because the preeminent role of government is the protection of our inalienable rights. That's it. Government may do more than that, but according to Thomas Jefferson and many of the Enlightenment thinkers, its preeminent role is the protection of our rights. So when somebody's rights are being violated by, for instance, discrimination in the economic marketplace, that is the core legitimate function of government. No less so than to criminalize murder, no less so than to criminalize rape, no less so than to criminalize extortion. It's the government's job to step in and stop a violation of rights. And everybody agrees with that until it's some guy they don't like and they think he's icky and they don't like his rights. Then suddenly, look, government should stay out of it. Also, our society has changed in the sense of what we see. 100 years ago, it was very acceptable to a man who might actually be educated, warm, endearing, vibrant. He walked into your business and it was totally acceptable 100 years ago to say, get out of here, nigger! Today, we don't accept that anymore. We understand today that that's wrong. And we have had an evolution, so what was considered wrong 100 years ago, 50 years ago, I'm sorry, permissible 100 years ago, 50 years ago, 30 years ago, 20 years ago, we evolved socially. It's not considered acceptable today. And the last one that they tend to focus on is, it's all about the free market. As if the free market solves socialism, which I've talked about at length before. It absolutely does not. 100 years from the Civil War to the 1960s shows that the free market does not rectify anything. And some of these people make the absurd argument that there was never a free market because of the Jim Crow laws. Well, the Jim Crow laws weren't imposed by some space alien. The Jim Crow laws were imposed by the residents of those geographic areas. And so they had a free market, and they chose to use it to punish. Okay, so free market doesn't solve anything. And, of course, then people say, well, we never really had a free market in this country. Well, the market was, it would be hard to overestimate how much more free the economic marketplace in America was 140 years ago, right? And 140 years ago, there was a free market, and the people who demanded that their politicians enact Jim Crow laws, they decided they wanted to use the free market to punish, right? So you can't. And then the last one, of course, is, well, people say, well, there's never been such a thing as a free market. Well, if that's the case, then why are we talking about it? Shut the hell up. Because all you're doing now is you're throwing out red herrings. The point being that these seem to be the three arguments that bigots and racists, which is a subset of bigotry, want to throw out in their warped, perverted vision, their ugly, grotesque vision of what they would have us believe liberty is, and it is anything but that. Bill?
I'm glad you're talking about the free market, because you reminded me before I go home after the show I need to stop by the market.
Oh, good. I'm glad I was able to help you out.
But I doubt that it's going to be free. What we're talking about here is we're talking about, in a lot of ways, some human nature. And we did chat about this a little bit. A lot of folks like to say racism is taught, it's learned, or bigotry is taught or learned. And I would say for the human race as a whole, sometimes yes, sometimes no. You know, we talked in the first segment, and of course you hit upon it again. For those who see someone else or another group as different, well, then they might start shunning a little bit because they don't get it. They don't understand. And I think in all animal nature, you'll see that. Like, you know, you got, like, I have three dogs. A buddy of mine came over this morning and brought his three dogs. I didn't know he was bringing it. Bad idea. Mm. Because there was now this fight. Right. Not that they all can't eventually learn to get along, but this group of dogs was unfamiliar with that group of dogs, and it was a big thing between his truck and my driveway. So I asked him not to repeat that. Yes. But so, and human beings go through this a bit as well. When you get to the point of where you now, and it's natural. Okay, I don't get it. I don't understand. So you then have a choice, and the intellectual choice is to learn a little bit about it, at least before you start condemning it.
Right.
And go into with an open mind. When you have people who are either unable or unwilling to do that, that's a gene pool violation as far as I'm concerned. It really is.
Well, you know, it's funny you say the gene pool violation, because I was sort of thinking the other day, if there was some sort of a fluid that I had, that is, you know, if I released the lock on it, it would go like aerosol, and it would extinguish the lives of bigots. I was like, Would I not? But I agree with you.
Like an EMP for bigotry.
Yeah, exactly. And because God, what a great place the world would be without them. But I agree with you. I think there are several factors in humans that can come up, such as bigotry or racism, because we're tribal, right? I think one of the great purposes of life that parents all too often don't teach their children is that one of the things that why we're here as human beings is to rise above that instinctual animal thing and act like people with brains and empathy.
Good point. We'll be right back. Yeah, whatever, man. Just push the button. You know what really grinds my gears? Man, I don't know. I'm just going to talk about some stuff today. So here's the deal. For the last 4 years to the week, I have been the chairman of the Nye County Republican Party. And I am no longer. When I was first elected in April of 2012, we had just run off the former chairman of 5 years who had been doing all kinds of filthy things, a lady by the name of Feli Katevas. And she's down the road, registered to vote in Clark County, creating, wreaking havoc there. But I was elected halfway through her term. So there was a one-year term. Then I was elected, actually the whole board, the chair, vice chair, secretary, and treasurer, were all reelected completely unopposed and unanimously a year later to a two-year term. Part of the way through that, the vice chairman resigned, and we brought a new vice chairman in who filled out that vice chairman's term, the first one's term. Then we had another two-year term a year ago, this last April of 2015, where I was reelected again. We got now the third vice chairman that I had worked with. The secretary is reelected. We got a new treasurer. I'm now halfway through my term, and I decided I brought it up last January that I was going to resign after the April meeting. Reason is we had the caucuses coming up along with the precinct meetings there. We had the county convention coming up in March. And then in April, we had our first meeting of the new central committee from all the delegates at the county convention. And at that April meeting, there's a lot of stuff that has to happen. There's a number of things in state law that have to happen. So what I want to do is get through the caucus in February, the convention in March, the meeting in April, and then at the end of that meeting, do nominations and elections for a new chair. It turns out the vice chairman wasn't able to keep his position within the NCRCC, so we had to have an election for vice chairman as well. I'm happy to say that an excellent guy by the name of Joe Brzezinski was elected as the chairman. And I am ecstatic to say that my political ally and who was my political director for a good couple of years, Lisa Marie Johnson, is now the vice chair. I also want to address, I talked a couple weeks ago about the vice chairs that had served with me. One was Edmund Gibran, great guy, businessman, sharp guy, didn't do all the precinct organization that he needed to. Honestly, it's a tough job. He left, new guy that took over, that was Andy Alberti. And I took a couple shots across Andy's bow a couple weeks ago when I talked about it. And then the next guy was Leo Blundo, who's a guy that looked like he was working real hard, and in fact takes a whole bunch of credit for stuff he never does. And, he takes credit for nearly 1,000 registered voters as though he actually did that. A group called Engage Nevada did all of that. He had nothing to do with it. He takes credit for bringing Ted Cruz to town. He had nothing to do with that. As a matter of fact, the new chairman of the NCRCC, Joe Brzezinski, is the one who brought Ted Cruz out here. So there's been issues with everybody, specifically Andy Alberti. Okay, I want to make it clear. I believe Andy thinks that I don't think he's a good guy or I don't like Andy, which is not the case. Andy just didn't make a very good vice chairman. That's my opinion. My opinion is he did nothing as vice chairman. He made some excuses, the regular same ones month after month, as to why things didn't get done, which is not the same as actually working on solving the problems. Identifying problems is one thing, But when you don't do anything to work to overcome them, you're just using them as an excuse not to get any work done. That's my opinion. I don't dislike Andy. I actually like Andy. I think Andy's a good man. He's done a lot for the community. He's run for office before. He's worked on a bunch of campaigns. He's a bright guy. So he hosts a meeting on Thursday mornings. I know that a week ago, after this show had aired, that next week when he had his meeting, he fired a couple shots back towards me, I was told by various sources, and that's okay. Tit for tat, I get it. Andy, I don't think you're a bad guy. I like you. I sent you an email about that. I just don't think you were a very good vice chair, and that's my opinion. Others might have thought you did a wonderful job, but since they don't have a TV show and I do, and I got to come up with something to rant about every week, yeah, you got caught in the crossfire. I still feel that way about the performance that Andy did in that position. But again, I like Andy. I think Andy's a decent guy. I think he does good stuff. He's come up with some really brilliant ideas now and again. He has a lot of ideas. I think some of them come across as being, you know, very good stuff. So I just wanted to leave that. I wanted to clear that up just a little bit. Another thing I wanted to talk about is just pat myself on the back a little bit, man. I live in a house that is encompassed in, it's a compound, if you will. I got a 6-foot tall chain link fence all the way around the perimeter with 2 layers of barbed wire on top. And the only way in and out is through the big double gates at the driveway. And it is a very large perimeter. It's not quite an acre, but it's awfully, it actually probably is about an acre. It just takes a weird shape. But on the side of my house, just on the other side of the gate, is a little area where I can go out and actually shoot my handguns. But it's always been kind of a problem because I don't have a gate to walk from my front door through the gate to the right. I got to go all the way around this big whole deal. And I was finally able to rectify that. I spent a good couple of days, 2.5 days. A buddy of mine gave me a hand for a little bit. I ended up getting in a 6-foot gate, barbed wire across the top, replaced a couple sections of 6-foot chain link that had all been kind of cobbled together with a properly woven in brand new piece, got all the barbed wire properly stretched and put up there and all that good stuff. And I got to tell you, it's perfect. I'm happy as can be. I've been walking back and forth through that gate just because I can. And I got to tell you, I'm excited about that. So with all that being said, Dave, we did not get into talking about Apple in the first segment, and I want to give the last 5 or 6 minutes of my segment to okay. talking about that.
Can I say one thing, though?
Of course.
You said patting yourself on the back.
Okay.
Here. What you really do deserve is a pat on the back for your work over the last couple of years as the chair of the Nye County Republican Party. That, for me, would be excruciating. I would suck at it, let me be clear. And it would be excruciating. And watching you do it, you did a phenomenal job. And aside from your haters, like that gal you mentioned who's now causing trouble in Clark County, aside from these small-minded, petty haters, anyone who has been a member of the Republican Party in Nye County, which is a very libertarian-type GOP, owes you a debt of gratitude for what you've invested in the last few years in that party.
Well, thanks, Dave. I appreciate it. And you know, the new chairman, Joe Brudzinski, is relatively new to Nye County, but he by no means is new to politics. He, in 1976, at 21 years old, he was a delegate to the National Convention.
Wow.
From Michigan, which Gerald Ford grew up in Grand Rapids. He is a Michigan all-but native. And Joe was a Reagan delegate. From Michigan. So he's been a bit of a very conservative maverick his whole life. And 4 years later, when he was 25, again, he was a Reagan delegate to the 1980 convention where Reagan got the nod.
All I can say is and, he's got some big shoes to fill.
Well, I appreciate it. He wears a size 15. So somebody's going to have some big ones to fill from there. And just to chat about that for a moment, because he's relatively new to the area, and it's kind of neat because his family has been following him. He's had extended family moving here. So they're
How long has he been here now?
About a year.
Okay.
About a year or so and been interested in the area for a while. But the advantage to that is when I was chairman, you got to realize that a contingent of people who were Ron Paul supporters took over the party in April of 2012.
That was very exciting back at that time.
It was.
Some heady stuff.
Oh, yeah, it was. And they elected me as the chairman. So I was perceived as like the Ron Paul chief go at him rabble rouser, which in fact is not actually the case. But a lot of narrow-minded people saw that they wouldn't engage with the party. So,
oh, you were shielding the party.
Yeah, we are shielding away. Oh, yeah, yeah. But we can't even deal with those guys.
And, mutiny!
And Bill Carnes must be a bad guy, so we're not going to deal with him.
Mutiny is a flip.
So with that being said, there's a lot of preconceived notions, the vast majority of which were false, but some of them were true. I am a very liberty-minded, highly conservative man, and my politics go that way, and I will not stave that course. I mean, I'm not going to vary from that course. I will stay that course. So with Joe coming in, he has not been acclimated into any particular group or mindset or ideal that is locally based. And I expect that some of the doors that have been closed to the NCRCC as long as I was chair for 4 years might now be opened, because Joe would have an opportunity. He'd be a fresh face and some fresh ideas going in. Great guy. I've told him I'm available for you anytime. I'll still update the website when you need it. You know, if you need me to handle a few things, if you have any questions, I'm here for you. We met for an hour on Monday. I gave him all of my electronic files, everything. Good guy, and I'm here to help out. I'm not leaving the party. I'm still on a couple of committees. I'm still a delegate from the I'm so part of the delegation from Nye County to the State Central Committee. There's 10 altogether, 2 officers and 8 elected. I was one of the 8 elected people. So, but thank you. Yeah, so I'll still be involved.
When is the official transfer date?
Oh, of the chairman?
Yeah.
It was last Saturday on the 16th of April. Oh, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, nomination and election that day. He is the chairman. I am no longer the chairman. He has the email address and everything.
I know you've been looking forward to a little decompression time.
Yeah, I am. Yeah. I am.
So that's very cool. I think it's very interesting that what I hear you're saying, you can tell me if I'm mistaken, is because he hasn't yet had the opportunity to coalesce with any particular faction and thus become identified with any particular viewpoint, you know, because the Republican Party has, like the Dems, they're all pretty much on one sheet of music. The Republicans are scattered.
Yeah, and that sheet of music's out of tune.
Well, yes, but yeah. The Republican Party is scattered.
Yeah.
You've got everything from people like you that are definitely leaning towards the libertarian side of republicanism.
I like to call it more liberty-minded.
I'm with you on that.
Yeah, because libertarian party,
right.
There's many things about that party I don't identify with.
I have issues there too, yeah. Right? But then you go to the Republicans, you swing all the way over to the neocons.
The John McCain's and Lindsey Graham's of the
right,
world.
Yeah. Which are just disgusting.
Yeah.
Okay. So, and there's everything in between the Republican Party.
Yes.
So he hasn't yet had the time or occasion to fit into one of these pigeonholes.
Not at all.
Therefore, since they haven't identified him as such, he may be this or that, but since nobody knows, doors will be open.
Yeah, and Joe also, he's a very smart guy. I mean, he's got a lot of brains. And the thing is, he's a very personable guy, too. I mean, you can joke around with him. He'll bust balls with you and, you know, throw back a beer if you want. I mean, he's an all-around good guy, very sharp, very politically savvy. And I, honest to God, that's exactly the type of person I hoped would replace me so that more doors would open and we could get more people coming in and, you know, just carry on.
Timing is everything.
That being said, we'll get to Apple in the next segment, maybe.
In a minute. Remember that was all the rage?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was the funniest Bud Light commercials, man. Welcome to segment 4. This is where we go through your viewer emails. And they need to start down here today. DaveandBillShow@gmail.com.
Didn't we?
Yeah, I was prepared for that. Send us your viewer emails. We get them every week. We enjoy getting up. The more we get, the more stories that we have an opportunity to chat about, more topics, if you will, to choose from in this segment. So if there's something you want to hear our expertise and intellectual or just BS about, this is where you want to send the email. In addition, all of our archives can be found online, the videos and just the audio if you want to go to totallyunprepared.info. Last week's show is not yet up. Dave did post it. I have not downloaded it and rendered it and put it back up yet for the audio.
Okay.
I'll get around to it. It's probably going to be next week. Starting tomorrow, I'm completely packed through Sunday night. And because of all the stuff I'll be doing, I'm probably going to take Monday and relax.
Didn't you just step down?
Yeah, no, totally different stuff. Totally different stuff. This is my stuff.
Okay.
My
stuff. Then it's a pleasure.
It is. Yeah, it is. Okay. So we do have a viewer email to get to. However, we've been talking about it for 2 out of 3 segments, Apple.
Yes. Okay. Love this. I publicly here stated that I do not believe that Apple did crack the...
FBI crack.
I'm sorry. The FBI did not crack, or their claimed independent contractor, whoever, did not crack the encryption on the iPhone from the San Bernardino case. And then, of course, I mentioned last week that this is evidenced by the fact that with other iPhones running even older software, they're still in court with Apple, trying to get Apple to help them with that. And so now I thought this story was...
So again, the allegation was, look, they probably got nowhere with this, but they realized that the argument that they were using in court to try to compel Apple to give them a completely massive master key to all iPhones, that they were going to lose that.
Oh, yeah.
So they backed off and contrived this story.
Correct. So they could, so they didn't have to lose face.
Right.
They said, oh, we got into the phone. So we have no need for this action anymore. Because the United States government is incredibly arrogant. And to file the suit and then to say, oh, we realize we're going to get handed our lunch and we're going to lose this great tool we've been using to beat companies over the head. That's just not how the United States government does business. So they had to have this contrived story. Then last week we found out that older iPhones running older software than the San Bernardino
phone. They still can't get it.
They can't get into those, which substantially validates my theory. And I gave some in the first story, I gave some litmus tests that will be coming up as to whether we can believe the government, such as are they providing police departments with information to follow through on prosecutions, which the answer is going to be no. And this morning's story validates that even further. The government came out and said, based on what they got off the San Bernardino shooter's phone, there appears to be no co-conspirators, nor was there any communication with anybody before, during, or after. Well, if you didn't get into the phone, as I tell you.
That's the only story they could possibly.
Right. You can't come out and say we have a list of co-conspirators, right?
And it's interesting how they put it out, based on the information we got off of the phone, not based on the information from the phone.
Right, right. Now, here's the other thing. Any information, such as who you called, that would be in the possession of their carrier.
Yeah.
They don't need to get into the phone, right?
Right.
So, you know, and they specifically said that they didn't call, they didn't contact anybody before, during, or after, okay? And even if you use things like Snapchat has a record of what
sure.
you did, right?
The email system you use, if you use Gmail, Hotmail, Hushmail, whatever, well, not Hushmail so much, but, I mean, those are the sorts of things that they can go to that. So it's... The phone is an end.
Right.
Someone else is another end, and the government has access to all those various conduits in between.
And as far as the part that might be encrypted, okay, because that's the only part you really want. The rest of it, like we say, is available through other sources. The part that's encrypted, I mean, they'd have to brute force it. Okay. And brute forcing something like that is, we're talking minimum months and months and months and months. Very likely, since it's Apple's encryption, years of trying to brute force to finally break that encryption. I remember when the White House first brought on its encryption system, it was estimated that brute forcing was going to take 20 years. Now, of course, technology has changed. It wouldn't be 20 years. But that's the concept of brute force. Because encryption, the salient point of encryption is not that you can't get the data. The salient point of encryption is you can't get the data in any time frame that matters.
Right.
Okay. So they say the information we got off the phone is... No co-conspirators, which is the only thing they could say.
We're in the clear. No big deal.
Since they're lying. Yes, yes. All right, so let's talk about this.
Okay, so yesterday I was at the grocery store, and this is not entirely uncommon, but, I'm in there, buying some stuff and with my girlfriend, and this wonderful lady comes up to me. She's got a relatively thick Spanish accent. And she comes up, she goes, oh, you were the man on the TV. And, oh, yeah, nice to meet you. We shake hands. And she's there with her guy. I don't know if they were married, husband, boyfriend. I'm not sure if she's a Miss or Mrs., a senora or senorita. I'm not sure, but I do know her last name is Gonzalez. And she had asked me if we got her email. It was about a month or so ago that came in Spanish. And I obviously remembered that.
I never saw it.
Okay, well, you know, I check through some of those. You use our email to send story links. I actually read what people come in, and I brief you on those more often than you see it. But it came in a little over a month ago now, and I read through it, and it was about pesticides, the concern of these harmful pesticides that go into the ground, groundwater. If it's like on grass, kids playing it, it ends up in the aquifer, our local aquifer, mm-hmm. and some of those things. So anyhow, I told her, I said, yeah, I'm pretty sure we talked about that. You know, just check the archives. I went back and I checked the archives and I realized we didn't. So we're talking about it now.
All right,
I want to make good on this because it is something that is important. Now, I don't particularly worry about it myself because I don't use pesticides in my area, but a lot of people do, especially if there's things in agriculture. And it's not certainly something that's just localized to our little valley in the Basin 162 aquifer. This is throughout the country and throughout the world. We're talking about poisons that are going mm-hmm. on these various plants, pesticides to keep pests away. And, of course, there's herbicides to kill things, Roundup, mm-hmm. and, you know, what is the most famous herbicide in history? Agent Orange.
Oh.
Agent Orange, right. They can spray that from the air on an entire forest, and within 3 days, it is dead.
Defoliated.
Yeah, and I'd actually like to have some of that for some weeds around my house, but that would get into the soil right. and into the aquifer. So she wanted to know our thoughts on these things.
Well, I think it's one of these double-edged swords. Because in anybody who's familiar with agriculture understands that your yield is going to be substantially diminished if you cannot control pests.
Sure. Okay.
Also, in some environments, entire types of crops, not just your crop or this guy's crop, entire types of crops can be wiped out. As a matter of fact, in South America, the banana crop, the ones that there's a particular kind, I forget what they call it, the type of banana we're most familiar with here in the United States. You go into the grocery store, there's a bunch of bananas.
Chiquita.
Yes. There's a more formal name.
Oh, yeah, the Chiquita banana. Yes. as opposed to the Dole.
They're facing a crisis that could wipe out all of the crops of that particular kind of banana.
You wouldn't know it because I just bought bananas for 52 cents a pound.
Right.
How do you grow a crop in South America and ship it here, and it's still only 52 cents a pound for me?
It's what the cost of labor is down there.
There's a lot involved. I get it. I mean, I understand all of that.
The prevalence of the crop.
52 cents a pound. Yeah. My goodness. So, I'm paying more for Idaho potatoes.
But this is just an example of way that entire crops can go away. But
and what did we have in the 80s? We had the California fruit fly.
That's and devastated.
Pesticides are and huge yield is what stopped all that.
Right. So, but on the other side of the coin, these pesticides are poison.
Yes.
And
neurotoxins to humans in a lot of cases.
In some cases, and they are going into the ground, and they do end up in the foods we consume, just like the antibiotics and the growth hormones and all of that. We have in my opinion, ecological problem with these pesticides and these herbicides and so forth. My problem is not so much with where we're at, because I think that's the natural arc. Okay, you start to produce something, it yields a tremendous benefit. Great, let's keep doing this. But then we learn the negative sides. But then normally that. People appreciate the positives, and then we come to discover the negatives later. We understand the negatives.
Sure. Now. Lead tube, toothpaste tubes.
There you go. Lead paint on mm-hmm. children's toys.
Yeah. X-ray machines yeah. when you went to go fitted for shoes.
Right, right. Yeah. So my issue now is not that where we're at. I mean, it's a problem. We've got to do something. My problem is that companies like, say, Monsanto, they're so powerful. And they buy politicians. I mean, we should really, if they're not going to move forward in their laboratories with developing products that do the same or similar things, you know, maybe a little better, maybe not quite so good, but we're not being poisoned, if they're not going to proceed with this because they're getting filthy rich with the way it is, then they need to be compelled, because this is harm. This is the harm equation I talk about so often. This is harm. So if they're not going to move forward in the process of minimizing the harm, then the legislature should be forcing them to do it.
Well, but the legislature ain't going to do it because they're employed by them through all the donations.
Right.
But
that's
this is
the problem.
Something that's interesting. The big push on organics and grass-fed beef and natural this, that, and the other has moved so far. Monsanto's taking a hit in their last quarterly report, down mm-hmm. as much as 25% in some areas. Mm-hmm. So here's my solution to this. This is everybody in America getting together to do this, so that means it'll never happen. But everybody right. in America doing this, and that is for 1 month, even if we only did it for 2 weeks, it'd probably make a dent, but for 1 month,
right.
only buy organic fruits and vegetables at your local grocery stores. Only buy organic, grain-free, grass-fed, hormone-free beef, chicken, pork, everything. Only buy that, because when you get a month's supply of all of that stuff that goes to waste,
right?
Those farmers are going to stop doing that, and they're going to start going organic.
Yep.
Farmers and ranchers and will be forced
into it. And you're right, because the problem is, as long as people are profiting, and profiting handsomely, to say the least, off of things that are poisoning us, they're going to continue poisoning us. That's the problem.
And this includes buying like the all-natural burger at the restaurant that the fast food joint
sure.
you go to.
As a matter of fact, Chipotle. No GMO foods whatsoever.
Yeah. And Carl's Jr. has the all-natural burger you can go to. So those ideas, that's what I'm thinking. That's what you're thinking. We'll
Thanks
talk more next week.
Bye-bye.